Welcome to Flicks of Doom, the official movie podcast of Geeks of Doom. I'm Empress Eve, and here with me is my little honey bunch of oats, Justin Vactor.
Hello.
As always, we'll be bringing you the latest movie news and box office results. This week, we'll be reviewing Matt Reeves' Let Me In, the American remake of the Swedish vampire film Let the Right One In. We'll also take a look at the number one movie of the week, David Fincher film, The Social Network. Justin, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find us?
As always, Flicks of Doom is F-L-I-X. So if you're searching for us in iTunes, on Twitter, at Gmail, all of those things, it's Flicks of Doom. And you can always visit Geeks of Doom, our official website.
And can they subscribe to us anywhere?
You could in the Zune marketplace if you have a Zune, or in iTunes.
Very good. Justin, what's in the news this week?
Well, I am a big fan of the TV show Mad Men, and for some strange reason, you are not. I don't know what...
It's not that I'm not a fan, Justin.
Oh, okay.
It's that I've never watched the show.
Oh, okay. Well, you need to get on that so you know who Jared Harris is, because he's quickly becoming the hardest working man in show business, because we've mentioned him before. He's been in numerous things: Resident Evil, Apocalypse, Lady in the Water, and a number of other shows and movies that we've talked about. And he now has secured the role of the villain in the sequel to Sherlock Holmes, Professor Moriarty.
I think that's pretty cool, because it is funny how lately, on the last few episodes, we brought his name up, because it seems like everything we watch now, we're like, hey, look, it's that guy. It's the Resident Evil. I think it started out with like, oh, look, it's the Resident Evil 2 guy. Like, for me, I kept saying that. And you were like, he's the Mad Men guy. And so I think he's pretty cool. And, like, everything he's in, you know, he's pretty good. But this is a major role for him, though, I have to say. Like, I don't know. I think he'd probably be... I don't know how he is on Mad Men. Like, what's his character like on Mad Men?
He's the boss of the advertising agency. He's one of their bosses, and he's got a British accent, and he's kind of a stuffy Brit.
Okay.
Living in America while his family is back in England. He was also in, I just recently reviewed for the website, the wonderful adaptation of the old television show, which I forget the name now, because the movie was so memorable. Oh, Lost in Space, I'm sorry.
Right.
The wonderfully prize-winning Lost in Space.
That you love so much.
He was in that. He played the grown-up Will Robinson.
Right.
But guess what? They dubbed his voiceover.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, which, I mean, at the time, I had no idea who he was. I did not know he was British, but in the movie, you can definitely tell he's lip-syncing. So it's someone else's voice over his. But that, yeah, even going back to that, I was like, man, this guy is in everything.
Well, in Sherlock Holmes 2, I wonder how much, like, the character will be in it. Like, how much of him will you see? Or will he be sort of the shadowy figure he was in the first movie? I mean, I'm guessing the character will have a bigger role, like you'll probably see him more, but how much of it? Because in Sherlock Holmes, you know, you don't really get his perspective, you know, it's always like Holmes' perspective. So I wonder how much he'll be in it, but he seems like a pretty good fit for the movie.
Yeah.
Did you like the first movie?
I enjoyed Robert Downey Jr., but overall I was disappointed by the first Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, really? I too liked Robert Downey Jr. I thought he was amazing in it, and I can't imagine who else could have played that role. But I think the other characters, I didn't love them as much. I didn't really like the actors in those roles so much, but I'm looking forward to see Robert Downey Jr. again. And Stephen Fry, he was cast in it recently, so that's pretty good.
Yeah. Actually, one of the things, besides the soundtrack, and I did purchase the soundtrack because I loved the Hans Zimmer score, but besides that, the other thing that I liked was kind of the relationship between Watson and Holmes.
Yeah.
But there was just, I don't know, the Guy Ritchie-ness of it just did not work for me in that movie, and I was very disappointed.
I didn't like Rachel McAdams.
Oh, yeah.
I thought she was really out of place. I mean, I like her normally. Like, I pretty much like her in almost every movie mm-hmm. she's in. But, and not that she did a bad job, it just seemed very out of place. Like, I didn't really believe that she was, like, the one woman who could outsmart Sherlock Holmes. It just was unbelievable. So, yeah, I'm not looking forward to seeing her again if she's coming back. I don't know if she's coming back, actually. Mm-hmm. Actually, wait a second.
No,
I think, is she being replaced?
Who knows? Who cares?
Well, let's see. Sherlock Holmes 2 is coming out December 16th, 2011. So, we'll wait. I'm sure there'll be plenty more news about this movie before then.
Yes.
So, there's another piece of news this week, and mm-hmm. it's a biggie.
Oh, yeah, it is. Eve, it is. No, not Noomi Rapace is going to be replacing Rachel McAdams. I'm looking on Geeks of Doom here.
Yeah, that's what I was just looking at. I was like, wait a second. They're like, I don't know how that skipped me.
Yeah, before, the girl, she was in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Good job, Noomi.
Okay, so what's the other big news of the week, Justin?
Well, of course, I'm excited that all of the Star Wars films, well, let's just put those in parentheses, maybe, will be getting a 3D re-release starting with The Phantom Menace in 2012. And I say maybe because based on how the first one does is whether we're going to get the other ones or not.
Justin?
That's what I heard.
I'm not thrilled about this news. I can't stand 3D. I can't stand it. I can't stand how every movie ever made has to be in 3D now, and how we have to go back and take every single movie ever made and make it 3D now. I think it's not worth doing, and this is crap. So that's how I feel.
Well, and this is not anything new. Comes as a surprise to anyone who's been following the Star Wars saga, because I remember way back in 2004 or 2005 them talking about George Lucas wanted to release them in 3D, and at that time I was thinking holograms. I was like, oh, it's really going to be actual 3D and not just, you know, the red and blue lenses that at the time I was thinking of 3D. But I would like to see how they do this, Eve. Especially if they take their time on it. Well, Eve, you love 3D that comes out at you. So what if the Millennium Falcon flies at your head?
That would be pretty cool. But I don't think they're going to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to do that.
Well, I think they're going to at least do a better job than what we saw this year with Last Airbender and Clash of the Titans. Mm-hmm. I think George Lucas is going to... They're not going to... From a technical standpoint, I don't think George Lucas ever cuts any corners or says, you know, let's just release some crap, because he's all about digital technology and furthering the visual medium. And, you know, with the founding of the special effects studio with the original Star Wars or Episode 4 as we know it now, that's something that's always been at the forefront of Lucas. So I think Lucas is going to do a good job with these 3D conversions, and I can't wait to see Darth Maul's lightsaber flying up my head.
Well, I agree with you there. I don't think they're going to cut corners, and I don't think we're going to go see it and you're going to be like, wow, there's terrible 3D. Like, I don't think that. I guess I just feel like it's unnecessary. And on top of that, I know that the versions that are going to be in 3D are going to be the special editions, which I don't love them. So, you know, this news isn't really thrilling me at all. I mean, the only thing I could say that I'm happy about is that the movies will be re-released in theaters. And I'm going to admit it. I'm going to go see it again. I'll go see at least the original trilogy again in the theater. I went when they re-released it in, what was that, 97 or something?
Yeah, when those special editions came out. Mm-hmm.
And then whenever they re-release the movies, I've gone. Yeah. So, you know, I'll go again. I mean, yeah, George Lucas is going to get my money again. but I don't know that I'll go see the prequels again.
Well, I don't know if they're going to get to the originals, because I don't think, because there's the Phantom Menace is confirmed for 2012, right. But each one after that, it depends on how well the re-release does. So if the first one bombs at the box office, there will be no others. So
they should just start with Star Wars, the original one.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They should just start with...
I would prefer that, but yeah. At this point, this... Like, we will never see it the way that we originally saw it. Like, the way right. that you and I originally saw Star Wars, which was when I first saw it on VHS 4, 5, and 6, and the original cuts. And mm-hmm. then I saw the prequels as they came out in the theaters. But it will never be like that for anyone who's growing up today. I think it's always going to be the special editions and the prequels first, and then the original trilogy or the original saga. So I think that's just the way it is now. Although yeah. we can try as we might to steer our younger generation towards the way that we saw it, which I think is the better way to see it. But I think that'll be fighting an uphill battle for us for the most part, because it's going to be out on Blu-ray and it's going to be out in right. these. So it's like, yeah, just it's a new way to experience it. And I don't know. I think the prequels are going to look better in 3D, because especially with episodes 2 and 3 being shot digitally.
Right.
I think those are going to look better. I don't know how the originals are going to look, but as I've said on previous episodes, I like the 3D that you almost forget you're watching it, and it's just another level of immersion in the film. So if they can do it right, which I think they will, then I'll go see them regardless. But if they can do the 3D right, I will be happy. If they don't do it right, I will not be happy. So that is my thought.
Right. Okay. Well, I think I, too, will give it a chance when it comes out, just because I'm sure my friends are all going to want to go. And so, you know, it'll be a fun day at the theater, what have you. But if it sucks, I'm going to be really pissed, because that means they won't be re-releasing the rest of them. Mm-hmm. And I won't get to see Empire in theater again. And that'll be pretty depressing. So I guess we'll have to wait until early 2012, is it?
Yeah, and our friend Jay, the movie god, wrote the last movie, if they release them every year, Return of the Jedi is going to come out in 2017. Mm-hmm. And think about how the landscape is going to look. We're talking now from 2010, looking at 3D movies. In 2017, what is the 3D landscape going to be like? Are we all going to have 3D TVs in our home? Is it going to be so commonplace that we don't even think about it? Or is it still going to be a fad or a spectacle like it is today?
Right. I don't know. I have a feeling that it'll be more commonplace because of how everyone is jumping on this whole 3D thing. Mm-hmm. And people are putting their money in 3D technology. So I'm guessing it's going to be pretty commonplace by 2017.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for the news this week. You can go to geeksofdoom.com and read more about these stories and many, many others over at the site. Let's talk a little bit about the box office this week, Justin. I know you went to see, what, every movie that came out this week?
Sure, Eve. I did not see Case 39, but I've seen everything else in the top 10 I've seen.
Okay.
The big ones that opened up this week were The Social Network and Let Me In, which we will be reviewing a little bit later in this episode. Those are the pretty big releases, and Case 39 as well. And The Social Network, surprising no one, topped the box office, and it was right in line with the predictions, the studio's predictions. $23 million, and the follow-up, Wall Street 2 dropped. Last week it was number one, and this week it dropped to third behind Legends of the Guardians. So that the initial reporting of Oliver Stone's biggest debut, that really doesn't mean anything, because it's not likely to surpass the World Trade Center, which made $70 million. And so that biggest debut really doesn't hold a lot of water. But it's currently, it made another $10 million this weekend. So its total right now is $35 million. So Wall Street 2 it looks like it's just going to drop and drop and drop and drop. But the Guardians of Ga'Hoole, I think, did a pretty good reversal there. And they made another $10.5 million, bringing their total to $29 million. The Town came in fourth, and Easy A came in fifth. Your movie, Let Me In, came in a disappointing seventh, and it made $5 million at the box office.
That is so depressing. So depressing, because that movie was amazing. So, as we'll get into later, but so we kind of suspected that Social Network would come in number one, and I know everyone that I know that's seen this movie loved it. I didn't get to see it yet because I only got to go to see one movie this weekend, but I am going to go see Social Network probably maybe next weekend or the weekend after. So I know you loved it, Justin. So why don't you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, I think The Social Network is one of the best movies of the year. It's definitely in my top five. I loved the movie, and it's technically brilliant. I think all of the aspects that come together and define it as a movie and make up the parts of the movie just work together flawlessly. It starts off with Aaron Sorkin's script and dialogue, which it has a level of depth to it, and emotion, drama, humor, which it's surprisingly funny. It's a lot of, I laughed a lot more than I thought I would. And so that's where it starts. That's what I think is the foundation for the movie, is the script. Just an amazing tale of the way that it's based on a book, The Accidental Billionaires. And the book is kind of the founding of Facebook. And it's an interesting story because there's some controversy. Mark Zuckerberg, who founded Facebook, was sued by two different parties over the idea of Facebook. And did he create it himself or did he steal it from other people? And they ended up settling out of court with both of the parties. But that right there is what the movie is about. It's not about people going on Facebook and poking each other and liking things.
That's good. Because I think Wonder Rob was like, what did he say? If Farmville's not in this movie, yeah, I'm going to be really pissed.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonder Rob, my co-host on my other podcast, Entertainment Overload, he likes the funny stuff. So that's what he was talking about there. But the script, like I said, is the foundation. David Fincher is one of my favorite directors. Fight Club is one of my all-time favorite movies. And I will put Social Network up there with Fight Club and David Fincher directing. And then the thing that rounded it out for me was the cast. Andrew Garfield, who is my favorite current actor, amazing performance in this. He is going to be Peter Parker in the new Spider-Man reboot. And after seeing him in this, I still don't see him visually as Spider-Man. He does not look like Peter Parker to me, but I have no doubts that he's going to be able to pull it off acting wise because he's a tremendously talented actor. And there are scenes in this that in the movie that are very emotionally gut wrenching, and you feel for his character, like you really feel bad for his character in the movie. So that, I love that. Jesse Eisenberg as the lead, Mark Zuckerberg, this I think is the role that he was born to play. I feel like it was written for him, like it was created for him. I can't see anyone else playing this role. And Jesse Eisenberg's been compared to Michael Cera many times, both in looks and in his acting style. But I think he clearly separates himself with this performance. The way that he delivers Aaron Sorkin's dialogue is quite amazing. And I compared it to a machine gun delivery. And the dialogue is kind of the bullets, and Jesse Eisenberg is the gun, and he just, it's amazing how this dialogue comes out of him. So it's just fascinating to watch. Justin Timberlake did a great job as the co-founder of Napster, kind of a sleazy, slimy character. And then also, I have to mention Armie Hammer, who plays the Winklevoss twins, who they said that they came up with the idea for Facebook, and they wanted to call it Harvard Connection. It was basically like a dating service, like a Match.com for the Harvard kids. I had not seen him. Well, I looked on his IMDb, and he's been in one episode of Arrested Development, and he's been in like one episode of all these other shows. But this is clearly his breakout role. And after this, people are definitely going to take notice. Armie Hammer. He was actually supposed to play Batman in the Justice League movie that fell apart. And now I'm really sad that I'm not going to get to see him as Batman, because like I definitely could see him making a major impact as Batman. And just, I was listening, Dave Chen, our friend over at Slash Film, he did an Audio Boo interview with Armie Hammer, and he was talking about how the direction that the director wanted to take Justice League in, and it sounded like a very fascinating movie. So I'm disappointed that we're not going to get to see that. But just an amazing movie overall. The cinematography was fantastic. It looked amazing. I saw it twice already, and the first time I saw it in a digital screening, a digital projection screening, and it blew me away. I was not prepared at how good it was going to look. I did not know it was going to be in digital projection, and I've talked to Eve previously about digital projection.
Oh, right, right.
And the second time I watched it, like I watched it Thursday night on digital, and then I watched it Friday morning in a non-digital projection, and I was like, please take the Vaseline off of the screen. I cannot see what's going on. It felt like I took my glasses off, like my prescription glasses off. It was blurry. It was dirty. And I was like, it was very much like the difference between Blu-ray and DVD. And I feel like if you've been watching DVD or if you've been watching non-digital for a while, you know, it doesn't really bother you, or you don't notice it. But then when you compare it to something that is so much sharper and clearer, it's definitely just the clarity of it with the both with Blu-ray and with the digital projection. It's like night and day. If you see them right next to each other, you can clearly tell. So that's just something to look out for. But yeah, the movie looked amazing. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross's score just perfectly suited the kind of uneasy tension of the movie and the drama of it. So everything about the movie made it, I think, one of the best movies of the year, and it's definitely going to get Oscar buzz from Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor, I'm sure Best Director. So, yeah, definitely one of the best movies of the year.
Cool. Well, I definitely look forward to seeing it. And so in your mind, this should have been the clear winner for the weekend.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm surprised Let Me In didn't do better, because it opened on 2,000 screens, so that's quite a lot, and I guess, I don't know if people just weren't,
I mean, Easy A beat it, I mean, that doesn't make any sense. You Again beat it, I don't get it. I really thought it would have more of an audience, like, I feel like it was on everybody's radar, and what the hell went wrong? I don't understand.
I don't know if the marketing quite let everybody know what exactly it was, but we can talk about that in the actual review. Now, next week, Secretariat opens, and that's starring your favorite John Malkovich about the horse. It's a Disney. I think that might either open up at number one or a very strong number two. I think maybe.
What is it up against?
Life as We Know It, which is the Katherine Heigl and Josh Duhamel.
Oh, good Lord. That's coming in number one. Let's face it.
No.
Let's face it.
No.
That's number one. Okay, well, mark it down. I said that's coming in number one, and you say Secretariat.
I say either Social Network again or Secretariat. I did see Life as We Know It at an advanced screening, Eve, if you'd like.
Oh, you're so lucky.
It is good.
Listen,
Eve.
I saw the trailer. So first of all, I don't need to see the trailer to know exactly what's going to happen in the movie. I can like, after this podcast, I will call you back and I will tell you everything that happened. That's first of all.
No.
Then you see the trailer and you're like, thank you for showing me the entire movie. So seriously.
I can tell you guys, I've seen the movie and I went back and watched the trailer. I've actually seen the trailer a number of times on some of the TV shows I was watching this week, and it does not give away the entire movie. There's actually a very big thing that happens in the movie that I'm not going to spoil, but I'm glad they did not give it away in the trailer. And I think the trailer makes it seem like a traditional romantic comedy that you've seen over and over again, but there's definitely a unique aspect to the movie that I found.
No, I was going to say, that's why I think it's going to come in number one.
No.
Because I think, you know, it's like, let's face it, Seabury's taking his girlfriend to see that movie.
No.
Okay? This coming weekend.
No.
I'm telling you. We'll see.
No. All right. We'll see, E. But I do. There's actually, I think there was a, like a advanced preview tonight. Or I'm sorry, not tonight, but yesterday, Saturday. Mm-hmm. And it was like an advanced showing for every, oh, sneak peek is what they call it. I'm sorry.
Right.
So people had a chance to check it out before it actually comes out. But I will say I enjoyed it, and it surprised me in how much I enjoyed it.
All right. We'll see what happens next week. We should stop placing monetary bets on this stuff.
Sure.
So this brings us to our geek movie of the week, which is Let Me In, the movie directed by Matt Reeves, who we know from Cloverfield. And Justin, I have to say that, like, seeing Cloverfield did not show you Matt Reeves' potential. This movie, I think, absolutely did. I loved this movie. I thought it was great, and I think it really holds up against the original Swedish film. And I'm very sad that it came in seventh at the box office and made only $5 million, because I definitely think it deserved better than that. What'd you think of the movie?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, although I will say, and I think Seabury talked about this in his review, which you can read on the website, it's very much something that it's not, there are a few surprises in it if you've seen the original, or I haven't read the book, but I'm sure if you've read the book and you've seen the original Swedish film, very close beat for beat, like what exactly happens in the movie. There are a few things that are different, and there are a few different ways of telling it. And it's set in America. It's set in New Mexico rather than Sweden. And it's still set in the 80s, which I liked. But
yeah,
it's very close to the original. And I liked it for the same reasons that I like the original. But I don't think I can say that I like it more than the Swedish version. And I'll get to that in a little bit. But there are a few things about the American one that I didn't like the choices that they made.
Okay. Well, I've read the book, and I've seen the original movie. And so I feel in this situation, I have to take the American version, and I have to really look at it separately, because I already went into this film knowing way too much. Mm-hmm. So I definitely had to say, okay, you know, I'm gonna look at it as its own entity. And for on its own, I enjoyed it. It's a horror movie, but it's not a gotcha horror. It's not torture porn. You know, it's just a really slow and suspenseful film. And if you're not familiar with the source material of the previous movie, you know, I think you're definitely watching this movie going like, what the hell is going to happen here? Like, you just don't know. You're like, what is it all leading up to? You know, you just have no idea, like, what the deal is. And I like that, because I feel like too many movies today are so in your face, or they have like that PG-13 horror, you know, way about them, with quick cuts and, you know, gross outs and just that MTV mentality. And I just feel like this is really,
oh yeah, this is a definite throwback to previous horror generations, and it's a much different pace than modern horror films, where I feel like a lot of actiony in your face, or like you were talking about, the torture porn movies, it's all about the scare and the actual act itself. And in this movie, I feel like it's about building the suspension and the tension, and the suspense and the tension. And so it's more about the journey than the destination. Whereas I feel like something like Saw, or I haven't seen Hostel, but I'm sure it's very much about, okay, how can we kill in the most gruesome way possible? And that's what's scary about it. But in this one, I feel like the horror comes, and the scariness comes out of anticipating what's going to happen, because it's a very slow, methodical pace to it.
Right. I think, we'll just talk a little bit about what the film is actually about. There's this young boy named Owen. He lives with his, he's, what was he, 12? He was 12 going on 13.
Yeah.
and he lives with his mom. His parents are going through a divorce, and, you know, his mom is sort of like a non-entity. It's like he has too much time where he's not under parental supervision,
oh, yeah.
Which is another thing that I like, because this film focuses, he is the star of the film, him and Chloe Moretz, who plays Abby, and they're the stars of the film. So you have these two young children, they're, you know, 12 or so years old, and you have to follow them through this whole, they carry this whole film. And I just like the fact that, you know, when you have a film where the parents are just not involved, I like that. And these kids, they really carry the film, and their acting was superb. So
yeah, did you notice they don't even show the mother's face in the
yeah,
movie?
Yeah, I did, you know, when Dave, you know, my husband Dave and I, we were at the movie, and right away we're like, you think we'll ever see her face? I don't think so. Like, they made it such a point to not show her face, which I thought was hysterical. So that must be interesting for that actress to not have your face in the
yeah,
movie at all.
Because I was looking at some of the images from the premiere, and I was like, who is that? Oh, that's the mother. Yeah.
There you go. So, Owen, he's bullied a lot at school. There's three kids who, they're constantly picking on him, whether it's physical bullying or psychological bullying. And, you know, we never really know why he's a target, but he is for these kids. And every day is like, you know, another, you know, he's got to watch his back for every little thing. And then, you know, in the beginning, you see that he's, you know, really frustrated about it. He doesn't tell anyone. He doesn't tell his mother. He doesn't say anything. So he's internalizing it. But you could see when he's alone and when he talks to himself and, you know, like he's really frustrated about it. And then one day, this girl, Abby, moves into his apartment complex. And, you know, she doesn't seem like the average 12-year-old girl. And he notices that right away, and he's intrigued by her, and she's obviously intrigued by him, because right away she makes it a point to kind of go and meet him, even though she tells him right away, like, oh, we can't be friends, you know, and but yet she's drawn to him. And she moves in with someone who is seemingly her father. And then as the movie progresses, you see that she's not just a little 12-year-old girl, she's actually a vampire. And so it's all about their relationship and how they interact, and, you know, the struggles. You know, she's a vampire, but like she has her own set of struggles that she's trying to cope with, and, you know, he has his everyday struggles, and it's really interesting how the two of them, it's weird because it's like a 12-year-old love story, right, with these characters. So, and while all this is happening, there's this whole, you know, serial killing aspect to the film, and you just never know, like, if someone's going to be killed, when, how it's going to happen, is it going to happen? And you know, it's almost like the horror of the film is secondary to the relationship between these children.
Well, stop me if you've heard this one before, Eve, but this movie is a vampire film based on a book where the two young protagonists fall in love, and one is a vampire and one is not, and the non-vampire is, well, yeah, there's kind of like a forbidden love type of thing.
Right, right.
So, yeah. Very similar to another vampire franchise that we
yes, except
talked about
no
before.
One is sparkling in this movie.
Yes. Now, this one very much does not make up its own rules in the vampire lore like that one does, but we won't speak of that one.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And they both reference Romeo and Juliet in the films.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about this movie being a remake, I was actually just talking about this on our Comics of Doom podcast that we just recorded with Hunter Camp, where that we were reviewing a comic book film that was adapted from a specific comic book story. And so the thing that I noticed was, and that's the same thing I noticed here in this adaptation, because I know the source material so well, there wasn't any surprises for me. I knew exactly what was going to happen in the film itself. So on one hand, I enjoy it because I enjoy the source material, and I enjoy it because in both cases, it gives it a wider audience. It's more accessible to a wider audience because more people are going to watch an animated film than they are going to read a comic book. And more people here, at least, are going to watch an American film rather than a Swedish film where they have to read subtitles, where I've known a number of people come to me and say, I'm not about to watch a movie with subtitles. I don't want to read. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very ignorant and also at the same time limits you to, you know, your own very, very much your own viewpoint of the world. And you're just trying to stay inside your own bubble and not see things from another country's perspective, or, you know, just, I feel like that I'm a person who has lived in many countries around the world, and I love other cultures and influences. So I always jump at a chance to watch a foreign film where I can see another culture's perspective.
Right.
And it's interesting to me that an adaptation is able to get a wider audience and expose more people to the story. But at the same time, I can't enjoy it on the same level as the first time I'm watching something. So that's kind of, it's the same thing that happened in this one that happened in that one, where I really enjoy Chloe Moretz. She's one of my favorite actresses. And this is two for two for her this year for me. Great roles she's had. And I'm really going to follow her career for the rest of... I mean, I think she's going to be one of those actresses. I don't want to, you know, knock on wood, I don't want to jinx her or anything, but I think she's going to be able to make the transition from child actress to adult very easily, because I think she's doing things like this, like Let Me In, and not... I mean, she was earlier this year in another movie, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, which I... Actually, most of the reason I saw that movie was because of her, but that she really had nothing to do in the movie. While a lot of her friends are doing, or her peers are doing Disney movies or things that are specifically made for children, I think she's taking a different approach and finding roles like this.
She's more like a Dakota Fanning or Abigail Breslin. Yeah. She's definitely more on that level.
Well, you know who she reminded me of was when I was watching the special features when we talked about the movies of M. Night Shyamalan, the special features on The Sixth Sense, and I talked about it here on this podcast, where M. Night and Bruce Willis, everyone talked to Haley Joel Osment like he was just an actor, not like he was a 12-year-old boy.
Right.
And I feel like that's the way they treat Chloe Moretz as well, that they just treat her as an actress and not, okay, you're just a kid and we're going to talk down to you.
Right.
So that I loved her performance as Abby, and the actual boy, Owen, Cody Smit McPhee, at first I didn't like him because I was like, man, this kid, this is somebody who I could see why he's bullied. Like, I felt like he looks very, not nerdy, but kind of, I'm searching for the right word. He kind of pathetic.
Right.
He looks like someone who would get beat up a lot and also seemed to have some type of psychological problem where he's standing in the mirror with the knife and the mask on. And I was like, okay, what's going on there? Like, you can tell this is a troubled individual, and I think it stems from obviously his parents, number one, and then the situation at school. But that whole thing, I felt as the movie wore on, he kind of won me over. And I really did enjoy his performance by the end of it. Did you see The Road?
No, he's in that, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Actually, that reminds me, Dave rented it, and then we forgot about it, so we probably owe, like, I don't know, $15 on it right now, so I probably should watch it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I have not seen it either. And, actually, did you know he's Australian?
I did, because the only reason why I know is because I was at the panel at San Diego Comic-Con, and he was on the panel, and he started talking, and I was like, oh, look at that, you know? So they were all on the panel. Like, Richard Jenkins was in it, and Chloe Moretz, and Matt Reeves was there. And actually, that's what won me over, was that Comic-Con panel, because the way they spoke of the movie, and then they showed two clips from the film, and I was like, yep, I want to see this movie. Because, you know, I love the original film, and I love the book, and so, you know, I kind of always feel like, oh, what do you need another movie for? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I do understand why they did this, because it's the American version. And like you said, people in America really, I mean, let's face it, you know, American movies are the biggest movies. And so, you know, I've grown up in America pretty much in the same neighborhood I, you know, was born in. So I haven't lived all over the place like you. And I can tell you that, you know, the mentality of the average American is that you need to Americanize things for them. So I'm not surprised when things get the American version. So if you notice in this film, not only did they change the location, but the kid that's bullying him, like in the book and in the Swedish version, he tells him squeal like a pig. He says squeal like a pig all the time. Whereas in this film, he calls him a little girl. He's like, yeah, little girl, because in America, you know, if you're a young boy and someone's calling you a girl, that's like probably the worst thing that someone could call you. Mm-hmm. You know, like saying squeal like a pig isn't going to really have the same effect as, you know, you're a little girl.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel like many times we have this ethnocentric point of view where America is the greatest country in the world.
Oh, yeah, and, yeah.
And, you know, we don't want to see anything else from anyone else. And yeah, instead of taking in others' cultures, we are trying to portray ours on them. Like, okay, give them, you know, Hollywood movies will give you our movies. We won't take your movies. But yeah, that's kind
of
an interesting thing.
But, yeah.
Actually, I'm looking up here. Cody Smith McPhee. He was originally going to play the young Logan in the X-Men Origins Wolverine movie, but he ended up not taking that because of his commitments to the road. So I wonder how that would have turned out. Although that, I mean, the young Logan wasn't in it for very long anyway. So
right.
But yeah, that the cast. Both of the young actors, I thought, did a fantastic job. Now, there's one thing that I was waiting for, but then as the movie went on, I said, you know what? There's no way they're going to actually show this.
Okay, so spoiler. You want to say spoiler for it? Because I think I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. If you have not read the book or you have not seen the Swedish version and you don't want to be spoiled, then please, you know, skip ahead a couple minutes here, but I am going to spoil a major plot point from the both of those source materials. So please do that now. So I was waiting. Now, when I originally saw the Swedish version, there was one shot that showed the vampire getting dressed. And I thought it was kind of a weird thing to put in there because it looked like just a gratuitous shot of the genital area of a young child. And so I was wondering why that was in there, because it looked like stitches on the private area of this girl. And throughout the film, she kept saying, would you still like me if I wasn't a girl? And that is in the American movie. But you, when you first see it, you kind of take it as, and at least the way I interpreted it was, would you still like me if I wasn't human?
Right, you're right. She's saying a girl, but that's because it implies, like, would you still like me because I'm a vampire?
Yeah.
Right.
And so that remains in the American version, and that's as far as they take it. And so I was like, oh, okay. I figured they weren't going to go any further in the American one. But in the Swedish one, now, like I said, I haven't read the book, but Eve, correct me if I'm wrong, the vampire is not a girl in the movie, but a castrated boy.
Right.
And so that was one of the most interesting parts of the movie to me, the original Swedish version, and something that I always latched onto as kind of just a really interesting thing. And it's also playing off of, you know, the gender roles and how different are males and females? Like, I think I've taken many kind of biology classes, and it's biologically boys and girls are a lot closer than we like to define our in our society. You know, we like to kind of overemphasize the differences between boys and girls. Like, you know, girls, especially in our current society, no hair, you know, anything that's masculine or testosterone related, that automatically makes a girl unattractive. And you know, guys, anything that's feminine or
right.
So yeah, it's we try to exaggerate the differences, but very biologically very similar to each other. So that I feel like I really find interesting, that these boys falling in love, and it's not necessarily based on gender. So when I was watching the American one, I said, okay, I really do not think that they're going to do this, but I'm interested to see, maybe they will do it. And so, yeah, but they never took it that far. So that was, I was kind of disappointed that they did not.
First of all, two things. One, I knew they weren't going to do it because it's Chloe Moretz. And I was like, I don't think that they're going to have it so that you could see her genital, mm-hmm. even though you don't, you know, it's a castration. So all it is, like you said, like stitches. I kind of felt like, I don't think that they're going to do that because in America, to have a young girl, like, it just, I didn't think it would fly.
Oh, yeah. Let's
put it that way. It's not going to fly in America. And two, I did not think that in the film, they never revealed that she was a boy, right?
Yeah.
They didn't, in the America. Okay. I didn't think they were going to, because, you know, they kiss a few times, mm-hmm. and they're, you know, like, he's in love with her and she obviously wants to be with him. You know, like, she takes her clothes off, she gets into bed with him and everything. I mean, they're basically having a romance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for it to be the crying game in the end, you know, for 12-year-olds, that is not happening in America. That's another reason why, think about it. You say, like, you know, why can't you just watch the Swedish version? And it's like that. I mean, let's face it, as lewd as, you know, Hollywood movies can be in this and that, you know, there is the puritanical side of America. And you're not going to take 12-year-olds and take their clothes off, and you're not going to have two 12-year-old boys, whether vampire or not, kissing and in love. It's just not going to happen. Like, audiences will not stand for it in America. So that's why I was like, but I mean, even though, you know, Abby, were, you know, the vampire started out as a boy, you know, she's been living how many centuries mm-hmm. as a girl,
yeah.
you know what I mean? And essentially she is now a girl. Like, she dresses like a girl. She has her hair like a girl. Her name, you know, is a girl. Like, she uses the feminine voice, and we've heard what she could sound like when she's mad. So we know there's like the exorcist in there. Right.
Yeah.
And so, but she chooses to live her life now as a girl. So, and she has been. So essentially, Owen does fall in love with the girl.
Like, well, I think you can even interpret it as she is a girl. In the American version, she is a girl. Like, I think you can, I would not, if somebody came away with that interpretation, I wouldn't say, oh, you're wrong. I would just say, okay,
right.
Yeah, I think I can definitely see that in the American one, because there's nothing to the contrary besides her saying, would you still love me if I wasn't a girl? But again, you can take that like I originally took it. Would you still love me if I wasn't a human? Or if I told you I was a vampire, would you still love me? So that's, or would you still like me? So that, I think you can still interpret it that way. So that's an interesting thing about the
movie. So just so you know, in the book, what neither movie shows is there's actually a flashback in the book of the vampire. And when he got castrated, it's like a whole thing. And I thought that was like, I don't know, like, that added another level, and I'm really disappointed that you didn't get that in either movie. But I guess, you know, it wouldn't have really fit in. I think it might have happened in, like, the 1500s or something, and, you know, I guess it just wouldn't fit with the tone of either movie, but yeah.
See,
it was really good tidbit, though.
Yeah, but see, I think them castrating the movie, I think, for American audiences, it didn't that didn't even pay off because look where it came in at the box office. So it's you kind of neutered the movie for an American audience, but American audiences still didn't care at the box office.
Well, do you think American audiences realized that this was a vampire movie? Because I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I haven't really seen a lot of the marketing, so I'm not sure.
I really haven't seen much.
I've seen commercials, but I haven't, like, because, you know, I just don't watch trailers. So I've been avoiding, and I haven't had a chance to go back and look at anything. So I'm wondering, how many people know that it's a vampire movie? Because I think everyone I've talked to has been aware that it's a vampire movie. But
well, we always go through this every week where we say, like, hey, our friends knew, and it's like, we forget that our friends are all in the same circles, that they go to the movies every week and they write movie reviews. And, you know, when I always bring this up, like if I go into work, you know, in my office and I say, hey, everybody, did anyone see Let Me In? Anyone know what it's about? Chances are they'll say, like, what's that? I don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
So I always go by like my workplace. You know, I'm always like, who knows? You know, I ask around, like, who knows? You know, because our group, we're just already honed in to this stuff.
Well, and like I said, I think this is a very different type of horror movie. When you say horror today, people, I think, off the top of their head, first it was slasher films with Jason and Freddy.
I was going to say Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah, and now it's torture porn movies with Saw and anything that's, it's all about the kills. And you can look at Final Destination. Like, that's the current modern Hollywood horror film. So I think, well, and also you got to say like Blair Witch and Last Exorcism, those type of movies now, which I don't even know what to call those, and Paranormal Activity.
Docu-horror.
Yeah, those are the current horror movies. So I think this is very much a different type, and people just, I think this is a better type of horror movie myself. I just think this is a better overall movie than any of those other type of movies, because all of those types that I talked about, slasher films, torture porn, docu-horror, they're all specifically, they have a hook to them or a catch. And it's all about, okay, how can we make this catch interesting to people? Like, you know, with Saw or with Hostel or with any of those type of movies, or with the slasher movie, like, okay, he comes back to life and this is the type of guy that he is. Whereas with this one, I think it's very much focused. And the classic horror movies that leave it up to your imagination, those to me are far scarier than when they throw the monster in your face or I really don't like the movies that just rely on jump scares or just a loud noise.
Right.
Because I'm more, it scares me, but it's because I'm startled at this noise that comes out of nowhere, not because of what's happening on screen. So I'm not a fan of being startled in movies.
Right.
So this is my type of horror movie, Eve.
Me too. It's definitely my type of horror. Definitely. So if we compare it to the Swedish remake, there are some things I think I like a little better. Like, I like the fact that they introduced the policeman character.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the book, the policeman character is actually, he is dating one of the women in that apartment complex. Like, he's dating, I think, I'm pretty sure, he's dating a woman in the apartment complex who has a son named Tommy, and Tommy is the one who in the basement, that hangout, that's Tommy's hangout. That's Tommy's hangout. So that's how the boy, like Owen, and his, that's how he knows about the basement, because of Tommy. And remember in the movie he said something like about how all the kids used to hang out there or something, and he would go there when no one was around, and so it was like that was that kid Tommy was someone who he would record music for Owen and give it to him. And I like the book because the book has actually, do you see that scene where Chloe Moretz is wearing Kiss shirt? Remember that, like, when when she walks in, where he doesn't invite her and she walks in, she's wearing a Kiss shirt. And I thought that was really cool because in the book, he's listening to Kiss because Tommy made him some tapes. Hmm. He's actually listening to, I think he's listening to Destroyer, which is the shirt she's wearing. So I thought that was really cool. So that was a cute little tie-in. But
yeah.
So the policeman is in it and he's investigating these murders, like, you know, when they find the bodies and everything or people getting attacked, he's investigating that. And he goes to the hospital in the book. He goes to the hospital actually something like 3 times or 4 times. And every time he goes, he's trying to get the father character. He's trying to get him to tell him who he is. And every time he's like, well, we almost know who you are. And you see in the book, you get the father's perspective, like what he's thinking, like how can he get out of the situation, and you know how he's sorry and all this stuff, and how he's got to make sure the cop doesn't know who he is. So I like that they introduced that character back into the story because there was no policeman character in the Swedish version. But what they did is they got rid of the bar gang, the people that hung out at the bar. Which is fine with me because I didn't really like them that much in the book, and I definitely didn't like them in the movie all that much. So they got rid of that whole gang and the guy with the cats and everything. Mm. They got rid of that. I don't think that would have played out too well, the guy with the cats. I don't think that would have gone too well in the American version. Yeah. But
and you know, the actor that played the policeman?
Elias Koteas?
Yeah. I just now, like, when I saw him, I was like, is that who I think it is? And I have confirmed it now. It is. He played Casey Jones in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies. So that's I will always know him as Casey Jones, no matter how old he gets, which is it is really weird.
You know, it's funny because the day before I went to go see Let Me In, I was watching Some Kind of Wonderful, which is on Netflix Instant. Mm-hmm. And did you see that movie?
I have not seen it.
You have to put it in your queue. I love that movie. My boyfriend Eric Daltz is in it. And I love that movie. And Leah Thompson. And so you have to see it. You'll love it. And he's in that movie and he plays like a bad kid at school. Like he's always in detention. He's got he's like a skinhead. He's got a leather jacket and everything. So I thought it was really funny because I was watching that movie, which is from the 80s. And then I go to see this movie and he's in it. And, you know, he's got like the really balding hairdo with the mm-hmm. curly hair in the back and everything. And I thought he was great in this movie. I was really good to see him in it. I thought he did a good job.
I have to remove some things from my queue. I've got 503 things in my instant. I need to take some of these things out of here.
You know, Dave and I share instant and we haven't even gone over 200, I don't think.
Well, obviously, you don't have any interest in movies, Eve.
Obviously not.
I do, and I have an interest in Chloe Moretz. And, you know, Chloe Moretz was up for this role, and there was some other people kind of in the rumored to play the role of the young vampire. And
yeah.
The other girl that kind of caught my attention was Ariel Winter, and she plays the youngest daughter on Modern Family.
I haven't watched that show yet.
Which I've been pressing Eve to watch because it is, I think, one of the best comedies on TV right now. But she, I don't know if I could see her in the same role. Like, she, I guess I last year at this time, I wouldn't have said Chloe Moretz would have been good for the role. So I don't know if Ariel Winter might be, she may possess the talent, but I just thinking about it, I can't see her as this role, as that character. So I thought that was interesting when I read that she was up for that role. But, you know, I was thinking about also Matt Reeves, what you were saying. I've seen Cloverfield once, or no, I'm sorry, I've seen it twice. And both times it just did not do anything for me.
Right.
And so when I heard that he was the director of that and then the director of this, I was like, wow, that's interesting. The differences between these two, and you can say that they're both kind of monster movies to some extent, mm-hmm. but
yeah.
I felt like Cloverfield kind of showed too much. I felt like it was better when you were wondering what it was.
Right.
And so that's kind of, yeah, that was my thoughts on that. But do you think the film benefited from staying in the 80s? Because I'm surprised they didn't just take it to now.
Well, I mean, for someone like me and someone like you, who we love the 80s and we appreciate the 80s, I think it benefited us because I'm pretty sure you and I would probably have been annoyed had they brought it to, you know, modern day. Hmm. But with that said, with seeing as, you know, came in seventh at the box office, you know, perhaps they should have made it now. But, you know, how, what would they have changed? Like, you could still eat Now and Laters, right? He eats Now and Laters now. Yeah. And, you know, I mean,
he wouldn't have taken her to the arcade, and there would have been a lot more mobile devices involved.
Right, that's what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. Like, he'd have a computer, you know. I mean, let's face it, I think it was a lot easier to be a vampire in 1980. What was it, 1981 or 83?
Well, yeah, that's another thing. Like, the sophistication in tracking people down and privacy and, being able to locate people.
Right, I mean, I think she would have been discovered much easier in today's world. And
But eventually she's going to get to today's world. Like, she's not going to die.
Right, but that's another story. That's not this story, right? I mean, if you're telling the tale of you know, first of all, I don't think bullying, I don't know, is bullying tolerated? The way it, I mean, like, nowadays, you know, if you get caught bullying, you get suspended or you get, you know, like, kicked out of the school. It's a little different. I don't think, and not only that, I don't think today people just let their kids wander off, 12-year-olds by themselves. Like, you know, I was like 12 years old in the 80s, and, you know, I did used to just, my friends and I would just wander off just the way they did, wander off to the arcade or wander off to the movies or to the ball, like, you know, at 12 years old. And, you know, like, that was okay. And, you know, kids would, you see how he would sit outside every day? Like, that's what kids would do. They would go and sit outside. Now, in today's world, you know, you don't see, like, kids just sitting outside to be outside or playing outside. You know, like, everyone's inside on their computer or their video games or they're on their cell phone texting. So it would have been a very different tale, I think, had they brought it into today. Like, they would have had to rewrite the entire movie. Like, it would not have been this story. It would have been completely different. So I'm glad that they kept it the way it was because – I mean, you could say, like, well, you know, what was the reason for it to be remade then if they didn't change the whole damn thing? But, you know, there is source material. It's based on a book. So, and I think they kept pretty good to the book. I mean, they left a lot of parts out, but the parts that they left in, you know, were pretty close to the book. And so I feel like, you know, I don't like that when they take a story that's based on, you know, let's say a book, and they just rewrite the hell out of it. It's like, what's the point? There is no point. You have source material that's excellent in this case, so why ruin it? So, you know, I give Matt Reeves credit for keeping it so similar. Mm. I mean, he did change some things because the way the father gets caught in the movie is totally different than in the book. The book is the same as the Swedish film. Mm. Like, he gets caught at, what was it, the gym?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, but in this one, you know, they changed it. So, I mean, that's different.
I want to talk about that scene because that was quite spectacular. The car flipping over and the camera staying in the car. That scene I really loved. That was actually one of my favorite shots of the movie.
Yeah, they showed that clip at Comic-Con. That was one of the clips they showed, and I think everybody was pretty amazed by it because it really looked great.
The director of the Swedish film, Thomas Alfredson, he was not too happy that this movie was being made. He said on numerous occasions that he wasn't in favor of remaking the film, and this is a quote from him: "If one should remake a film, it's because the original is bad, and I don't think mine is." It's not too long ago that the original came out either.
Right.
The Swedish one was 2008, I believe.
Yeah, no, it was like all a buzz at the film festivals and everything, yeah. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
and that was
he has a point.
Yeah. And that was one of my favorite movies of that year. I remember going out and specifically seeing mm-hmm. it in the theater because of I had heard it was talked about on Slash Film and another number of other movie podcasts that I was listening to at that time. So I really wanted to make a point because I never would have watched that type of movie before. It was one of those movies that appears in like an art house theater and
right.
off to the side, not in your traditional where we see, you know, Mission Impossible.
Yeah, the indie theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is
he's got a point because it did only just come out and it got such rave reviews and it did really well. So, you know, you have to think, well, why remake that movie and why remake it so soon? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think he's got a point. Why so soon? But yeah.
Well, when I first heard that they were making an American remake, and we're getting the same thing with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah, that's right.
I feel like I would rather see the Swedish one and say and hand someone the Swedish version rather than say, okay, here, go look at the American one, just because you don't have to read subtitles. And so that's just me. I think it almost takes away from the original Swedish one as well, because you're saying, okay, this American one is better suited for you rather than go see the original one. So I think it kind of, in a sense, it takes away from the original one.
But you have to think, though, how many people are going to, like, that movie's been out for 2 years. How many people went to go see it? How many people rented it? You know, like, so it's sort of like, you have to think, are people, like, is the American version really taking away from seeing the Swedish version? Or would people who are not inclined to go see a foreign film or rent a foreign film, are they, like, is it just going to be the same? Like, I know people who, it doesn't matter how great the film is, they're not sitting through subtitles. Like, I mean, I know people who, now, as you know, Justin, I was hearing impaired most of my life. So I've always watched films with the subtitles for the hearing impaired. And a lot of people didn't want to watch movies with me because they don't even want that. They don't even want the English subtitles running on the bottom. So for people who, you know, you have to read, you know how many times people have said, like, I don't want to have to read the movie. So you know what? Those people are not going to go see the Swedish version. Now, if they didn't know about the Swedish version and they see the American version and they liked it, you know, then chances are people might say, well, I'm going to go watch the original. I want to see what the original was like. So they might actually get more viewers because of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just feel like if you're not inclined to do it, you're not going to, whether there's an American version or not, it's not going to affect whether you go see the foreign version, because if you're not inclined to it to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also there's a difference between something like The Departed and mm-hmm. Infernal Affairs, which The Departed won for Best Picture, got critical acclaim, and was a huge hit, versus Let Me In, which we've seen came in right. seventh at the box office, and it's probably going to go downhill from there. I don't see it rising yeah. any
probably.
In the subsequent weeks, but it's just a sad development. But also, I think at the same time, what you were saying about, or what I was saying about kind of taking away from the original one, the performance, I thought, by the original girl as the vampire, I felt her performance was great. And so it kind of, I almost feel like now she's going to get overlooked because now we're only going to look at Chloe Moretz and the American version.
Didn't you say she was dubbed, though?
I don't think so.
Wait. Someone just told me that.
In the Swedish one?
Yeah.
I have not heard this.
Who just told me this?
Oh, I'm looking on Wikipedia. It does list someone else as her voice.
Yeah. Like, the director didn't like her performance, so he had all of her dialogue dubbed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Lena,
that's weird. If you didn't tell me, who told me? This is bizarre now. I'm going to be scratching my head.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Well, whoever
that until
told me,
you told
me, I'm sorry,
that.
I'm not crediting you. I'm very sorry.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, very interesting.
Well, Yeah, I actually liked the boy in the Swedish version. I thought he was really good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, you know what? Speaking of the Swedish version, I wanted to say the pool scene in the Swedish one, I enjoyed much more than the way that they shot it in the American version. It's pretty similar, but I just, if I have to compare the two, I think the Swedish one is superior in that scene. I just enjoyed that scene more.
I agree. Well, I think they're both good leading up to the massacre. I think they were both equally as good. It's very similar. Like you said, it's like, you know, he's under the water, what have you. But the part where he gets saved because she comes and like massacres everybody, it was better in the Swedish version because I feel like in the U.S. version, that's where he was going for the grotesque with American audiences, where it's like, look, here you go. Here's, you know, the decapitated head. Here's the blood and guts everywhere. And in the Swedish version, there's like, I think the first thing you see is like his arm floating by. Right? I think it's something like that. And it's like, you're like, oh, shit. You know? So it's like you don't see what's happening, but all of a sudden you see like an arm floating in the water. And you know, you're like, oh, she's there. She's like, she's wiping them out right now.
Yeah.
And in the American version, it got really muddled and it was, you know.
Yeah, I remember. See, but I don't know if it's because the Swedish one had a lot bigger impact on me. I don't know if it's because it was just a lot better shot or if it was because that I wasn't expecting that to happen. I had no idea. And then in the American one, I was like, okay, when is it going to happen? I was just waiting for it to happen. So I'm wondering if it was just the shock of, because I remember in the theater, there was a much big, well, I saw this, the Let Me In, the American version, I saw at a critic screening, so it was, or I'm sorry, at a press screening. So it was only the press. There was no other audience. So they didn't have any type of reaction. But the original Swedish one, I remember people having an audible gasp when that first shot of the pool happened. So I'm not sure which one it is. But also, I think Matt Reeves uses a lot more computer generated effects than the Swedish director. Yeah. And for my personal taste, I felt like the Swedish version did it better and more practical effects.
Yeah, because in the U.S. version, when you see her attacking or you see her fleeing, it looks totally like a video game.
Yeah,
it
doesn't. And yeah, I didn't like that.
I didn't like that either, actually, that you bring that. I didn't like that either. I kind of saw it coming, but I was like, I didn't really like it.
Like, I can understand because, you know, there are things that humans, actors can't do, but at the same time, there's a way to film it so that it looks believable. And when you show that computer generated, it just does not look believable to me. It takes me out of the film. And I'm like, okay, now I'm watching a cartoon. Now I'm watching a video game. I'm not seeing the movie anymore.
Well, that's how I felt with Spider-Man movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I feel like, oh, here we go, Spider-Man the video game.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. I mean, you didn't feel that way with the Swedish version. You weren't like, oh, here we go, here's the fake scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was, I think that was one of the missteps to me in the American version.
You mentioned audience responses. I wanted to bring up my audience response. I went to see it Saturday at like 5 o'clock showing, and the theater at the last minute, it wasn't filling up. It was pretty empty until literally a minute before the movie started. Tons of people started coming in, and then while the previews were coming on, people were filing in, and then actually within the first 5 minutes of the movie, people were still coming in, which, you know, I have to say in my theater, that's not very common. Like, usually people are in the seats, you know, where they're going to be during the previews. You don't see a lot of latecomers, but yeah, it was like people were still filing in, so by the time the movie was on, you know, the theater was pretty full. And there was a lot of, oh, hell no's in my theater. And there was a lot of, what? There was a lot of that. Like, when they kissed when she had blood on her face, oh, forget it. My audience, like, they went nuts. Like, no way. No, no, no. Like, they were just yelling, like, no way, you know? And so there was a lot of that. And there was some laughter at times. There was, you know, people got a kick out of a few things. But so my audience, they were reacting a lot during the entire film. And also, you know, there's a lot of parts of the movie where it's just very silent, and you know, like, in order to really appreciate what's happening on the screen, the audience also has to be really quiet and very settled, and there has to be no sound. And I have to say, my audience was like that. Like, I was very happy that you didn't hear people talking and texting. You know, a lot of times you get the kids and they're texting, and, you know, you see lights and, you know, just like people crackling their bags of popcorn and nachos and you know, just making noise. And there wasn't, like, everyone was like pretty calm and silent. And so I think, you know, I got like the ultimate experience that I was supposed to get. So that was good. But yeah, I thought it was funny. You know, a few times people were like, no, 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 you know.
And I think we, as modern cinema goers and as American cinema goers, have a much lower attention span. And that's evidenced in when I went and saw Buried a few weeks ago. There's the opening shot of Buried is just a blank screen because it's just a black screen because he's waking up in the coffin. Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of experiencing it the way he would. And so you hear him waking up, but you don't see him. And my audience, just that 10 seconds of a black screen, just they could not wait. When's the movie going to start? Come on, man. And they're yelling. And like, I could barely hear. I heard the noises of the movie, like Ryan Reynolds waking up, but I couldn't make it out. Like, I heard there was noises, but I couldn't make out what was going on because everybody's yelling and talking around me. So very disrespectful. But I have no idea what was going on. Another kind of amusing thing that happened to me the other last week during one of my screenings, when I went and saw the Woody Allen movie, mm-hmm. You Will Meet a Tall Dark Stranger. The Hammer logo came up at the beginning, and everybody was like, Woody Allen's making Hammer movies now? And it was Let Me In. And
oh, yeah.
They had the wrong reel in. So, yeah, everybody was like, wait a minute, this is Let Me In. So they had to stop the movie.
That's
they had to
pretty stop the funny. And that is pretty funny.
Put the Woody Allen movie in. Did you notice, now, I was so kind of enveloped in the movie that I really didn't notice the score or the music.
Oh, I did. I noticed the score. I felt like it was very prominent, and I liked it.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because the composer is my absolute favorite composer that's working today, Michael Giacchino.
And he did Star Trek.
Yeah, he did Star Trek. He did Up. He did Lost. Like, every bit of music you hear in Lost is Michael Giacchino. So that's very much, he's my favorite composer, and I look forward to anything that he does. I will be purchasing this score because I have all of his other scores as well. So he is my current favorite. My all-time favorite is John Williams. So
yeah,
that's,
yeah,
if anybody wants to know my yes, personal opinion.
Yes, me too. Well, I thought he did really good. Like, a lot of the suspense, you know, in part was, you know, because of him, the way he did the score. Hmm. And it was very old school. I thought it was very, very old school sounding score, especially when you were supposed to be nervous. You know, he did a lot of those sounds, where it's like those high pitched sounds.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to hear the soundtrack on its own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, how it will play out when you're not watching the film.
Yeah, it's not out yet. So I pre-ordered it from Amazon, so I will be getting it as soon as it comes out. But that's something that I'm looking forward to. I'm looking at the budget. It was only $20 million, but as we said, it only made $5 million in its opening weekend. So do you think it will make its budget back, Eve?
Well, it doesn't look like it's going to make its budget back in theater, because if you strike out your first week, I mean, really, most films, when they're released, It's just like with novels. When a book is first released, that book makes the majority of its money in the first few weeks while it's, in hardcover and everything. And, everything after that is gravy, for the most part. So films are similar with theaters. It's like, you really have that first weekend that you're in the theater. That's your chance to make your money back. Like, that's like the ultimate thing. If you make your money back, the budget, in that first weekend, because everything after that, then it's a success. Now, had this film come in number two, I might have said, well, it has a chance because, next week it could come in number two again and make another, let's say it made 10 million. You could say, well, make 5 million and maybe the third week it'll make another 5 million and it'll make it back. But for it to come in seventh behind, Easy A and movies like that, and to only make 5 million, it's not looking good at all. And I'm not really sure how it will do on DVD because I think they have to really change the marketing for home video, maybe. I don't know. Maybe they got to sell out and just put Chloe Moretz on the cover of the DVD, like, in her vampire form, and, maybe that'll do it. I don't know. Mm. But, yeah, I don't know. It's not looking too good, which, really, I think it's unfortunate because I don't think this movie deserves to be at the bottom of the box office, and I don't think it deserves to. I mean, if they only made this movie for $20 million, in this day and age, $20 million is nothing, right? So for them to have such a low budget on a film like this that has special effects and such, and for them to not make their money back, it's really disappointing.
The scene where the boy is talking to his father on the phone and he's asking him, do you think there is such a thing as evil? Mm. Can people be evil? That was kind of chilling to me. And his dad just kind of thinks it's his mother's religious crap.
Right.
But it's something very different. And that relationship with his parents is what ultimately leads to the decision that he makes at the end. So that's kind of interesting as well. So overall, I enjoyed this American remake, but for my personal taste, I think the Swedish film is superior, but I do love Chloe Moretz, so that's another thing.
Well, I enjoyed all forms of the story, the book and Swedish version and the American version, so I'm definitely going to get Let Me In when it comes out on Blu-ray. Gonna get the Blu-ray. I was gonna say DVD, but I didn't mean DVD. I'm gonna get the Blu-ray when it comes out, and it's definitely gonna be part of my collection in the future. And I hope it has. I really hope it has director commentary because hearing Matt Reeves at San Diego Comic-Con talk about this film, I want to hear him talk about every film he makes, basically, after hearing him at the convention. He's definitely one of those directors that he just – and he wrote the screenplay for this one. So, he's really vested in it, and I really want to hear his take on the decisions he made, not only with filming it, but, in the screenplay. So,
yeah,
I think that'll be cool.
Yeah, definitely I think one of the – better films of the year, and if you're a horror fan, you're going to like this movie, but just to be clear, it's not the type of horror we've been getting lately. This is very much kind of a throwback to an older generation of horror films, and very slow, methodical pace, so don't go into it expecting action, action, action.
Right. So next week, we are not going to be reviewing any film, as far as I know, right? We're not going to be... what we are going to talk about is the New York Comic Con and the movie and possibly even the TV news that comes out of that convention that I'll be at with Dave 3, Geeks of Doom, and Chris, Henchman 21, and also James, who's Jack Bowerstein on geeksofdoom.com, and our buddy Hunter Camp, MK2Face. He'll also be there with his wife April, and so I'm not sure what he's going to be, if he's going to be in any movie panels, but if he is, maybe we'll get him to come on next week too to talk about it.
Yeah. Don't forget, everybody, if you'd like to contact us, you can always find us at our website, geeksofdoom.com. You can Twitter us or tweet us at Flicks of Doom. That's Flicks with an X. Or find us on iTunes, leave us a review there, or send us an email, flicksofdoom@gmail.com. Now all I see is red. These thoughts of hate killing me dead. I'm dancing on the
edge. Justin, can I come in? Justin, would you still like me if I wasn't a girl?
Whenever you're ready.
Ready! You have to say something, Justin.
Start.
Go.